It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 61 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Lots of things to talk about this week, Carson. We have Worlds coming up in just a few weeks, and we also got to see the Coruscant Invitational play out, or I guess we didn't see the Coruscant Invitational play out at 2017 Star Wars Celebration.
But what we did see was an Episode 8 trailer, which was awesome. Almost makes up for not seeing the Coruscant Invitational.
So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of our preparations for Worlds. So let's get to it.
Now, not everybody is going to Worlds, but I'm pretty sure store championships are happening very quickly after Worlds. Basically, Worlds and then shortly into the store championship season with not much changing meta-wise. So for those of you not going to Worlds, it's still definitely worth your time to understand what lists people will be bringing for each different faction.
The only new release we're anticipating right now is really the Sea-Rock Scum Epic Ship, which will bring along with it some upgrades to the Sick Interceptor. We don't know when that will drop, and we don't know if that will have a substantial impact on the metagame. So yeah, it's pretty reasonable to expect that the metagame won't change much between World Season and the following competitive tournament season. To that end, we talked with Kevin Lyons in our previous episode, and he shared a little bit about his thoughts on where Rebels are, state of the metagame for Rebels coming into 2017 Worlds. So today, Carson and I thought we'd focus a little bit in on the Scum and Villainy faction and see what they're bringing to the 2017 Worlds table.
Yeah, and this is a faction that I predominantly play and Tim has a decent leniency towards.
Well, I've been kind of pulled into it. I used to be a diehard Rebel player, and then I started to see all the cool stuff that Scum and Villainy could do, so I switched over, and now I've been pretty set there since Rebels was struggling for so long. Though I guess now's a pretty good time if I was interested in jumping back into Rebels. They've got some cool stuff, too.
Yeah, and Scum and Villainy right now have a pretty diverse palette of what they can bring to a competitive event right now.
The key component that we're both pretty fascinated with is, of course, the Atani Mind Link upgrade card. This is a one-point elite pilot talent upgrade card that reads, Scum and Villainy only. Each time you are assigned a focus or stress token, each other friendly ship with Atani Mind Link must also be assigned the same type of token if it does not already have one, and this comes in at just 1 point.
So your first ship in your squad takes a focus action, and then all of your ships receive focus tokens. Those later ships that haven't activated yet can still take a focus action. It won't distribute any more to the rest of your team, but they'll get an additional one on top of that.
Yeah, because of course, taking a focus action is different than being assigned a focus token. You obviously, in the game, can't take the same action twice in a turn, but this is a way where you can stockpile up those tokens. And we saw it predominantly before with a couple different lists, one of the key ones being Asajj Ventress, Fenn Rau, and Manaru.
Right, and Manaru is definitely the key player in every Mind Link squad pre-FAQ update, where her ability to pass those focus tokens, just allowing your ships to really pile on multiple focus tokens, and then even Manaru would get one of those focus tokens back that she passed, which was really powerful. Now that her range is limited to just range one for that ability instead of the whole playing field, she's a bit less popular, and so I've been looking at a lot of different ships to fill that Manaru role, and many players have as well. There was kind of one way to play Mind Link before, and now, because that's not as good, the playing field's been leveled, and Mind Link's still good, but you have to find the right squad synergies for you. So when building a Mind Link squad, I think you usually start with taking Fenn Rau. With the Atani Mind Link, the Concord Dawn Protector title, and Auto Thrusters at just 32 points, he is a steal of a ship. Very powerful impact on the board with those 5 dice range 1 attacks. Pretty high survivability, as long as you're not at range 2. And just at that rate is very good. Now, to support Fenn Rau, he's got the Mind Link for the action efficiency,
which is really important on Fenn Rau. He's definitely become the premier scum ace. You can hear old conversations where we talked about him and some of the limitations back when we were talking about using Push the Limit on him. He's not a great Push the Limit ship if you're trying to get action efficiency on him. He doesn't have an evade action, so he's not able to turtle up by taking a focus and evade token for defense. And he only has the 2 maneuver greens and a 3 straight green, no 4 straight green, which is really important being able to have that diversity of movement on a good push the limit ace to clear those stress tokens that you'll inevitably get. So as people have played with him, we've kind of learned as a community that he needs the action efficiency that you get from Push the Limit, where you can get multiple actions, but that stress token's a big penalty. So Atani Mind Link turns out to be a perfect way to give him the action efficiency he needs without needing that stress token penalty cost.
You really want access to those three banks, five straights, and one turns, as well as the option to Talon Roll or K-Turn when needed, which Mind Link provides. Now, to support that, you need to take at least two other ships with Mind Link, in my opinion, because if you have just two ships with Mind Link and one ship dies, then your Mind Link's worthless at that point.
It's funny playing games with Fenrau and three Mind Link ships. Even if Fenrau is the last one to die, just watching the kind of effectiveness of him drop as each ship dies. Because you start with the three ships, you're feeling pretty good. Lots of action efficiency. You can decide which of your ships is going to take the focus token to pass to the other ships. And then as soon as you lose that first ship, the game becomes quite a bit harder. Because all of a sudden it's like, well, if I want Fenrau to booster barrel roll or take a target lock, then that means my only other ship has to be the one to take a focus, which is not always the ideal action to take in any given circumstance. So it really becomes this game of deciding, well, is Fenrau just going to perform his maneuver and take the focus, or is my other ship going to take the focus? And then when that other ship dies and it's just Fenrau with Atani Mind Link, you can really see how dependent he is on having that Atani Mind Link upgrade card and having it be usable.
In the original Paratani, Asajj was a great pairing for Mind Link because, one, she gets amazing efficiency as well. The Shadowcaster is also a ship that wants and appreciates the value of those double actions, getting a focus and evade each turn, or focus target lock, or focus and being able to rotate your arc really helps the Shadowcaster's efficiency. But also, it helps Fenrau because it provides a sturdy platform to keep on the board and keep supporting the Mind Link of Fenrau as well. You, of course, have the Jump Masters, which all have an elite pilot talent slot, so they have access to Mind Link. Manru, not as amazing as she once was, still has pretty good synergies if you're able to fly her within range one of the rest of your squad. For those people who like playing tight formations, Manru is still a great choice. I personally like to fly a bit wider, flank with my ships, so I get less value out of flying Manaru. But you definitely still have the contracted scouts available. It's hard to fly Fenrau, Asajj, and a contracted scout with Mind Link and get value out of the scout, because you just don't have any points left.
So if you're looking at moving on from a list like Paratani, where you have to basically drop Manaru at this point just because of the range limitation of Manaru's ability, you're basically looking at a gap there. Assuming you want to keep Fen and Asajj at their current point totals, you're looking at a gap of 28 points, because that's how much Manaru costs with Atani Mind Link. So looking at Scum and Villainy, there are a lot of different directions you can go in terms of what you're going to fill that 28 points with. In some regards, it can be restricting, because say you want to put Old Turok in your list, the pilot skill 7 Protectorate Starfighter, who's got a really cool ability where at the start of the combat phase, if you're inside their firing arc, you can make them discard all their focus and evade tokens, which has got some really good synergy if you can get Old Turok in there with Fenrau at range one. Fenrau is obviously getting the bonus dice, so he can push out a lot of damage. The problem with trying to fit an Old Turok in this particular list is that your standard Old Turok comes in at 30 points with Conquered Dawn Protectorate title, Atani Mind Link, and Auto Thrusters. So if you want to fit it in for 28 points, you're going to have to drop something like the ever-valuable Auto Thrusters card for 2 points.
I like Old Turok at 30 points. At 28 points, it's a little harder sell for me. The ability's great. I mean, especially if everyone else is mind-linking, being able to strip all those focus tokens, great. Defenders aren't quite as popular as they once were, so being able to strip Focus Evade is not as valuable as it was last Worlds, but it's still really nice for whatever ship you're shooting Fenrau at, for them to have no defensive tokens. Then you get a crazy value on that 5 dice attack.
Other directions you can go for 28 points is you can put in things like a G1A Starfighter. The pilot skill 5 generic pilot has an elite pilot talent slot. So you can fit Atani Mind Link, this pilot skill 5 generic, and a fire control system. You get some reliable offense.
And so here you get decent action efficiency. You're getting that target lock. The thing with the 28-point ship that you're putting in with Fen and Asajj is that its primary role is to provide those focus actions to your other ships, Asajj and Fenrau. So the G1A fills this role pretty well because it doesn't need too many actions. It's getting a free target lock from FCS in your subsequent rounds. And then if it does become a target, you can then take that evade action and have your other ships take the focus action if they're not being targeted. So then you have a focus evade G1A, which is a bit more durable.
Yeah, the G1A suffers from a lot of the same problems that the Rebel B-Wing does, where with just the 8 hit points and 1 agility dice, there's a good chance that you can get taken down in one round. Having a focus and evade token goes a long way in making sure that doesn't happen, even if it just leaves you with 1 or 2 hull points.
A nice thing about the G1A is its pilot skill, I think, is pretty relevant. There's a lot of like bigs and a bunch of Rebel ship squads that are mostly around pilot skill 4. And so it's likely to at least be able to shoot once before dying if all their ships decide to shoot at the G1A. My issue with it personally is still its survivability. I think if somebody wants to remove that ship, they definitely can. And then when you're down to just Asajj and Fenn, it gets a little harder. Depending on where you are at the damage race, though, it can be totally fine. You just need to make sure you're ahead of the damage race by the time that G1A goes down.
So other directions you can go for 28 points to fit in with Asajj and Fenn. Y-Wings, you can get a generic Y-Wing with twin laser turret in there. The low pilot skill one, probably not the favored choice in this particular list, because like you're saying, Carson, the pilot skill does matter right now, particularly the 5 and lower range.
The main disadvantage with choosing Y-Wings is you don't have those elite pilot talent slots. You're not getting mind link on them. So you can definitely pick other ships that don't have mind link and get a decent amount of value, but you aren't getting as much synergy with your squad.
Yeah, if you're bringing Mind Link to the table, you probably want all your ships to have Mind Link.
Right, so you can use a Sick in this role, which I tried a bit. I liked the Six that aren't out yet the best. So when that C-Rock comes out, I'll definitely be playing around with Inaldra and Genesis Red in this 28-point role.
The problem is, though, for us people playing at Worlds, we're not expecting the C-Rock at this point to be out and legal for tournament play at that point, so there's not much value in testing with those extensively.
So one ship I tried out that I liked pretty well and got decent results with was Polyb Gadali, who is a Hawk that I tried because I got interested in Hawks because of Pulse Ray Shield. So Pulse Ray Shield's still not out, but with Cloaking Device and Stygian Particle Accelerator, you still get decent survivability. And I just gave him a dorsal turret and mind link, and that fits in at 28 points.
If we're talking about survivability in ships, it's definitely an issue as much, if not more, with the Hawk than it is with the G1A or the B-Wing. So that's where the Stygian Particle Accelerator and the Cloaking Device Illicit really come into play.
Yeah, and this is definitely varianced survivability, right? Because you have 4 green dice, so of course there's a lot of volatility there. It can hold up, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes your cloaking device breaks round 1, and then you just have a 5 hit point ship with 2 green dice, and that's great fun.
Yeah, that's part of the challenge of the Cloaking Device Illicit. This is a 2-point unique small ship only upgrade card that reads, action, perform a free cloak action. At the end of each round, if you are cloaked, roll 1 attack die. On a focus result, discard that card, then decloak or discard your cloak token. So there's inherent volatility here. I've played with this list a couple times, and any time where it breaks on round 1 is just incredibly frustrating in the game, even though that's part of what you're getting into when you play with a kind of variance card like this.
But his ability is very synergistic with Atani Mind Link, where at the start of combat, you may choose an enemy ship within range 1 to 2 of Polyb and take 1 focus or evade token from that ship and assign it to Polyb.
And here I think the pilot skill really does come into play, not so much in terms of combat, but if you're playing against lower pilot skill ships, you get to this really cool opportunity where if a lower pilot skill ship opts to take a focus token, then you're moving your Hawk and you can eyeball and see, oh, am I within range 2 of that ship? If you think you are, or you're confident you are within range 2, Polyb's ability is going to trigger at the start of combat where you can steal that focus token and assign it to yourself. And then when you're assigned a focus token, everybody else in your squad is assigned a focus token. So that way, all your ships could take non-focus actions and then still all be assigned focus tokens at the start of combat.
And this is particularly powerful against other Atani Mind Link squads, where sometimes the main strategy when playing against a Polyb is, okay, I'm just not going to take any focus actions. I'll just take other actions and be fine. But if your opponent's Mind Link squad opts to not take focus actions, you're doing pretty well for yourself. And then you hopefully have the choice to then later take a focus action in your pilot skill order.
And we can't forget, of course, to talk about Stygium Particle Accelerator, a card that originally came with the TIE Phantom that saw very little play because it was a modification, and the other TIE Phantom modification that you could use, Advanced Cloaking Device, was way better on the TIE Phantom than Stygium ever was. But it has a lot of good value here with the Cloaking Device. Stygium Particle Accelerator is a 2-point modification that reads, when you either decloak or perform a cloak action, you may perform a free evade action. And this can come into play even if your cloaking device breaks.
Right. So the turn your cloaking device breaks, as long as you didn't perform a free evade action that turn, you can still take that evade action. And it happens at the very end of your turn. So it's after you've cleaned up all of your green tokens from this turn. So that evade token is going to linger in until the next round.
Yes. Since you're performing it after the phase in a game round where you would clear all your tokens, you get to keep that evade token through the next round.
You still have to decloak, and your opponent knows where you decloak, and so that's awkward, and you can't cloak in the future, but it's not as terrible as it could be when Stygium helps with that.
So, Carson, you're kind of limited on points here because you can't go beyond that 28-point max that Manaru is filling. How do you feel about Dorsal Turret on Polyb?
Dorsal Turret's okay. I found I don't really need him to do that much damage in himself because the ability, like old Terrax ability, where you strip their defense tokens, as long as I select the right target. And here I like Polyb's ability over old Terrax because I have that ability of choice in the range 2 radius around Polyb, where I can look at the target that Fenrao and or Asajj are shooting at, remove their green token, and then that really increases the damage potential of my other ships, and even makes the attack with the Dorsal Turret fine if they have no green tokens to modify their defense dice.
Hey listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. It's time to announce our raffle prizes for the month of May. To be eligible for this raffle, you need to become a patron of Radio TCX before the end of April. You can do that by going on to patreon.com/radioTCX. That's patreon.com/radioTCX. We've got two prizes for you this month. The first one being a Soonterfell alt art promo from a previous tournament kit. Soonterfell is the premier TIE Interceptor ace, and this is actually a really cool alternate art promo, one of my favorites probably that's come out from the tournament kits.
Yeah, I think this was 2 years ago. Gosh, I feel old now knowing when all these cards were released. Yeah, this might be my favorite alt art with the Soonterfell having kill count of rebel ships painted onto his TIE Interceptor.
A really cool piece of art and a really cool promo if you haven't seen it before. We're also giving away one of the even older tournament kit promos. This is a Scimitar Squadron TIE Bomber, and this is actually a movie still promo. So it's a screenshot taken from episode 5 of the TIE Bombers doing their bombing run on the asteroid where the Falcon is hiding.
Which I think is a must-have for any X-Wing collector.
Again, if you want to be eligible for these promos, become a patron of Radio TCX before the end of April by going to patreon.com/radioTCX.
And now, back to the cast.
So there are a lot of different ways you could run Fen Asajj and some 28-point ship, but that's not the only type of Mindlink squad you can run. Fenrao's obviously still a clear choice here, but another one that's starting to pop up now that Manaru is no longer as viable a choice is a Fenrao list with 2 contracted Scout Jumpmasters.
Yeah, and here they're usually loaded with torpedoes and that R4 agromech, not abusing its original use with Deadeye, but here there's some decent synergy with Atani Mindlink and R4 agromech.
Yeah, having the torpedoes on the Jumpmasters has proven, in combination with Atani Mindlink, to still be a pretty efficient way to push out a lot of damage. In this list, you have the option, thanks to Atani Mindlink, that your 2 Jumpmasters, when they move, can opt to take target lock actions, which allows them to fire their ordnance, usually plasma torpedoes or proton torpedoes. And they can get a focus from Fenrao, who in this case is your focus engine, at least for a couple key turns. That way they have both a target lock to spend to fire their ordnance and a focus token to modify it. That, in combination with the guidance chips modification, which allows them to change one of their die results to a hit result, when they're using a secondary weapon, ends up pushing out quite a bit of damage.
Yeah, and it also allows you to spend that target lock, fire the torpedo, spend the focus to modify your attack, and then save a target lock for the next turn so you can fire torpedoes twice in a row.
Back when the triple U-boat lists were all over the place, we talked to death about the efficiency of firing torpedoes, but there are other reasons that a Jumpmaster is a really strong ship to have. It's super sturdy with 4 shields and 5 hit points. It's got an amazing dial, and it's got a native large base barrel roll action, which means it's an incredible blocker too, which will come into play more often than not when you're flying a ship at pilot skill 3.
Right, and even if your opponent is able to weather the torpedo storm, if you have even just a few hit points left on a Jumpmaster, you can use that as a nice blocker to set up Fen Rao coming in on the flank, ready to set up those 5 dice attacks, and setting up a block, taking a focus action just to support Fen coming in so he can do target lock focus or boost into range 1 and have a focus still.
One thing I really like about this list is it forces your opponent to make some horrible decisions sometimes. If you're bringing in your 2 Jumpmasters from one side and Fen Rao's coming from the other, and your opponent has to choose which one to pursue, which one to angle his ships at, that's a really nasty choice. Because if they choose Fen Rao, Fen Rao can still get up close and into their firing arc, triggering that Protectorate title, getting free evades at range 1 in arc, and pushing out a ton of damage with 5 attack dice at range 1. And then they've still got 2 torpedo boats following behind them. And then if they turn into the torpedo boats, that leaves Fen Rao there to flank them. And he's still a pretty effective flanker. Maybe not as efficient as a TIE Interceptor, but he can still do a pretty good job of staying outside of arcs and pushing out a lot of damage.
And where the Paratani imitation lists struggle is kind of their lack of diversity and how their points are locked up. The Fen Rao and 2 torpedo Jumpmasters have a bit of wiggle room here in points, where your baseline is plasmas, extra munitions. You could do no crew and have a few point bid, which is nice with all the other Fen Raos or Dengars and Bosks running around, even quick draws. But you also could opt to spend those points on, say, 4 LOM, or you could even bump your torpedoes up to get a proton torpedo and Boba Fett for that crit trigger. I do really like 4 LOM on the Jumpmasters because that first use is free where that ion token's not doing anything. And with all the Atani squads, locking out a focus is pretty valuable. Do you have a preferred build out for this, Tim?
So I'm in favor of, I think Boba Fett's a good toolbox card to have. Boba Fett, obviously, if you deal a critical damage with an attack, you can discard your 1-point Boba Fett crew card to discard an upgrade card on the opposing ship. This is a nice tool to have. Not that I have any specific reason to run it right now or a particular list I'm terribly afraid of. It's a great tool to have to strip that auto thrusters off of that really dodgy ship or pull the TLT off the Ghost. There's a lot of cool stuff you can do with that combination. So any way I can build this list to fit Boba Fett in there, I'm still a fan of. That being said, I think there's a lot of different great ways to run this. I think Forlom's good. I actually think Zuckuss can still be good in spite of his changes, in terms of being able to deal out a couple of points of key damage at a certain important point in your game.
You know, I never thought I would want a Boba Fett off a 1-point card, but Boba Fetting off an Atani Mind Link is pretty powerful, because then your opponent has to take their focus actions with their other ships, and that ship you targeted is no longer receiving any of those focus tokens.
You actually did this to me in a game we played the other day where I was running Fen Rao, and you Boba Fetted off his Atani Mind Link. And I think while I still had all 3 of my ships up with a Tawny Mind Link, and it became this horrible situation where all of a sudden it was basically like Fen Rao was operating as if he had no friendly other ships, because he was getting no positive value from them other than them existing on the board. And I have to fly him completely differently because he is dependent on himself to generate his own actions, which ended up meaning that he died shortly thereafter.
Yeah, he's not very good at doing that by himself. But Scum aren't limited to just aching Mind Link squads. Lists like Dengar and Bosk, both heavily loaded with munitions with a focus for Alpha Strike, can still be very effective. Yeah, they lost the powerful impact of Zuckuss, but you can still take Zuckuss and Inspiring Recruit then, or just opt for Forlom and Boba Fett instead.
Yeah, these lists kind of came to prevalence to counter the oversaturation of Dengar and Manaru in the competitive metagame. This list can push out a lot of damage really fast, and it was pretty great at taking off that Dengar before he got too many opportunities to double attack you in a round.
Right, and it was also great at just punching through defenders, even with Focus Evade and Palpatine. Those homing missiles don't really care too much. And Bosk's ability to turn crits into more damage is pretty great.
Yeah, it's a good toolbox there to have against if you end up facing a Decimator or a Ghost, which have a lot of hit points, you can start to push through those hit points that much faster.
Now, one thing this list did gain was the Scavenger Crane illicit slot, where now Bossk can get those homing missiles back. Used to be Bossk was limited to just one missile, but now with Scavenger Crane, as long as they keep killing ships, which they're pretty good at, you can get those missiles back, which is pretty sweet for Bossk, not for anybody playing against it. One advantage that Dengar and Bossk or other similar combinations is that they have really high pilot skill, which means it's really hard for enemy ships to avoid this Alpha Strike. As long as they're moving last, they can really set up and control when they're going to engage, get those K4 security droid triggers, and make sure they have you in their arc for double munition shots, which is pretty terrifying.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong archetype there. It's probably one of the most powerful Alpha Strike builds I've seen in my time with the game.
Kind of the opposite direction of Alpha Strike, you can go for a twin laser turret build. So here you're taking multiple Y-wings, usually at least three, with the twin laser turret upgrade. And now you can take a fourth Y-wing, or you can opt for, say, a Hawk Torkoal Mux, which allows you to play that pilot skill game with any player, upping Torkoal, which allows you to drop the pilot skill down to zero of a enemy ship, so that all of your Y-Wings get to shoot before, which this covers up one of the big Y-Wing weaknesses of them able to be pilot skill killed before they can shoot. So here Torkoal eliminates that fact and kind of lets you turn that on your opponent. You also can take a quad jumper where that value of that tractor beam gets amplified by each attack shot at it. So when you have a bunch of twin laser turret attacks, you're getting a lot of value out of that tractor beam. So you tractor beam an opponent and then open fire with all of your twin laser turrets. I really like taking a quad jumper and then three Y-Wings with R4 aggro mechs. You get reduced agility and then really consistent twin laser turret attacks. You also could take a contracted scout with intimidation. Here you get kind of the same effect as the quad jumper where you're reducing agility, but it's a little harder because you have to ram them with the scout.
But at the same time, you have a sturdier ship there who's not going to die as quickly as, say, a quad jumper or a Hawk would.
Right, so the 9 hit points is a lot better than the 5 hit points of the quad jumper.
Plus, it's a turreted primary weapon attack, which is always a great thing to have, especially late game. So there's actually a lot of really cool stuff Scum and Villainy is bringing to the competitive game right now. It's going to be interesting to see what people tend to favor at the upcoming 2017 X-Wing World Championships. But I certainly expect to see a lot of Scum and Villainy out.
Yeah, I'm pretty likely to play Scum at Worlds.
This past weekend at Star Wars Celebration, in addition to all the great Star Wars news coming out of that event, they held the X-Wing Open Coruscant Invitational, where all the champions from the X-Wing Open events that were held all across the world came together to play it out at the Coruscant Invitational to determine who is the champion. And we do have a new champion now, Jeremy Chombly from the Kessel Run podcast. Congratulations to him. It's a very high honor to win this event.
Big congratulations to all 8 of the System Open winners going on to compete in the Coruscant Invitational. Sounds like they did a cool alternate format, showcased some ships that didn't see a lot of competitive table time at the moment. A little upset with Fantasy Flight for not being able to stream it.
Yeah, that is really disappointing and actually kind of weird that they would put so much effort into this event series and then they would call on all of us X-Wing fans to vote on the ships that would be used in the final tournament and then have really no good updates or streams about the actual games that were played.
Right, they got a free pass last year where, okay, maybe they didn't have time to set up the streams for Star Wars Celebration. But this year, they knew they were doing it again. And so there's really no excuse for not having to stream. Really not sure why they're doing it at Star Wars Celebration if they're not able to showcase these amazing players competing. Why are they having them play alternate formats if nobody gets to see it? Doesn't really make any sense to me.
Well, hopefully for next year, if they continue to do the X-Wing Open tournament series, that they'll get this all figured out and we'll have a real stream so we can actually see these great players play some great games of X-Wing. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radioTCX and like our Facebook page. It only takes a second and it really means a lot to us.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really like the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why other people might be interested in listening. A lot of other people have already left reviews and we're really appreciative of that.
Including Roman J007, who thought our podcast was well-paced and had a great flow.
So thank you, RomanJ007, and everyone else who has left a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it.
And if you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.